Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, a full-service regulatory compliance consulting firm serving the ambulatory surgery industry, and Eden Group Development, publisher of the ASC Regulatory Compliance series of books by John Gailey.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. I am Judy D'Ambrosio, and I'm very glad you're with us as we have a great show planned for you this week. But just as every show begins, we're going to begin with some news, some noteworthy tidbits that may be of interest to you. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the CMS texting rule. We're going to talk a little bit about our IV bag shortage. And then we're going to give you highlights from the ASC Winter Conference that just took place in Las Vegas. Although I was not fortunate enough to attend, I will turn that part of our news over to John so that he can tell you what a good time he had and all he and my colleagues learned while they were there. So the first bit of news we're going to touch on today is that we are going to, hopefully for the last time, approach the new CMS rule toward the texting of health information. So as you are all aware, at the very end of last year, in December 28th of 2017, CMS updated its rules about texting among healthcare providers. So when this rule came out in December, it stated that the texting of patient information from one member of a healthcare team to another is allowed if the exchange takes place on a secure platform. The texting of patient orders is not allowed whether it's on a platform or not, is not allowed in any instance. So that came out at the end of the year, beginning of this year. And then last week, there was a clarification to this rule where we were told that it does not, in essence, apply to us, does not apply to the ambulatory surgery side of healthcare. So just to be as clear as possible and in all good conscience, John and I advise that because your average Android telephone and your average iPhone does not have encryption service or a secure platform, the texting of any patient information from one healthcare provider to the other via their telephones is a bad idea and should be avoided at all costs. Okay, and moving away from that, hopefully for the last time, the next little piece of news in our news quarter of the podcast. Well, this isn't really a noteworthy piece of information. It's more of a commisatory conversation about our current lack of IV bags. As you know, IV bags are a staple in everyday use in all of our centers, right? We use them to both administer and dilute medications and for basic hydration. But because of Hurricane Maria earlier in the year and the complete devastation of Puerto Rico, we have had, if not a nationwide, if not a worldwide, certainly a nationwide shortage. And that's because one of our largest suppliers has been brought to a complete standstill while they try to recover from the damage done there. So in the meantime, while we hope and pray for Puerto Rico to get back on its feet, the FDA has this week made an announcement that they believe that this shortage may improve in the next several weeks. They are working diligently to try to accept the import of this product from other foreign countries, and they expect that the shortage of the IV fluids will improve in the coming weeks or months. The FDA has also approved IV saline solution to extend its existing supplies, meaning that if an expiration date can be safely extended, it would allow some nearly expired product to remain in a healthcare setting in order to get through this shortage. So if you have more questions on this, because it's something that we are all dealing with, you are certainly not alone in that, you can go to www.fda.org and you can look for the upcoming dates for shipments to the country are listed there, and reasonable use alternatives are listed there, and the list of extending your supplies expiration dates is also there. So if you do get to the point where you need some help, feel free to go there and find what they can do to help you. Okay, having said that, we're going to move on to the next piece of news, and that is all of the highlights from the ASC Winter Conference in sunny, warm, beautiful Las Vegas. And I, of course, only have that by hearsay because I didn't get to go. However, John and the rest of my colleagues attended and found it unbelievably worthwhile. So I'm going to turn it over to John, and he can share with you the highlights and the things he thought were important to bring back to you.
Thank you, Judy. Yes, I'm sorry that you couldn't make the conference with me, but we did have a great time. There, the ASCA Winter Seminars is a new addition to the regular seminars and conference series that's offered by the ASC Association. It's now going to be held in January of each year, and this year included a coding and reimbursement seminar, the infection prevention seminar, which is brand new, and a regulatory and legal risk seminar. And I spoke actually during two of the sessions. One was entitled Get More Done in Less Time Using an Improved Board Agenda, and Introduction to Revenue Cycle Management for Non-Financial Administrators. So we talked already in one of our previous episodes about the board agenda, or about board meetings in general. And in a later episode, I think we're going to talk a little bit about the revenue cycle, since that's an area that a lot of our listeners probably feel that they have a bit of a weakness, especially if they only have a clinical background. So probably the two most interesting sections that I participated in or listened to during the conference was the HIPAA section, which was presented by a dear friend of mine, Christina Benton. We're actually going to talk about HIPAA in our middle segment of this show, and I'm going to have a brief interview with her that I did during the conference.
Great. That'll be great.
And then the last section is the new area, or the new addition to our conference series, which is infection prevention. So we are kicking off the a new focus on infection prevention in our conferences as we lead into the introduction of the new certified ambulatory infection preventist certification that's going to be offered through the Board of Ambulatory Surgery Certification in the fall of this year.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people interested in that.
Absolutely. And what we felt is that we wanted to kick it off with a little bit of training first. So this was our first opportunity to do that. We're going to do some more training during the ASCA 2018 conference, which is going to be in Boston. And again, by the way, I have an interview at some point. I don't know when I'm going to put it in here with the Director of Educational Services for ASCA, where she's going to talk about the content for ASCA 2018. So that'll be great. So let's just talk a little bit about infection prevention quickly here, because this, as I mentioned, is a new focus. We, those of us that work with the ASC Association, have been concerned about what the future of infection preventists are right now. There really hasn't been a lot of options for certification, even though CMS doesn't require certification. They encourage some type of training, specific training in ambulatory surgery infection prevention. So the purpose of this training is to get people ready to be an infection preventist in their organizations. And second is to be prepared to take an exam to be certified in this new credential that we're creating, which is, we refer to it as CAIP, C-A-I-P. By the way, anybody that's interested in it, you can go to the website, which is www.aboutcaip, that's A-B-O-U-T-C-A-I-P.org. And there's a lot of information about that. So I encourage anybody that is an infection preventist or wants to become an infection preventist to look into that website and learn more about it. And also to obviously, you know, start looking into the different educational programs that we're going to be offering. Similar to when we introduced the CASC credential, you know, for administrators, we added a whole bunch of educational programs. You're going to see the same thing happening here as we prepare our members specifically for being able to take the exam.
Perfect. That sounds great.
And the first exam, I can't forget to remind everybody, the first exam is going to be in the fall of 2018. So get your education in now. You know, look at the aboutcast.org website so that you'll learn more about it and be prepared to, you know, take the exam if you're interested in the certification.
And that website will give them all their prerequisites and how to sign up and how to... Perfect.
Absolutely. It gives them some ideas about how to train or, you know, get education, further education for it. You know, we're super excited at the ASC Association about this, and I think we're hoping that we're going to see a, you know, big interest in this and a lot of people getting.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. So.
You'll never believe this. I just walked into exam room 1, and Ms. Smith was reading Ms. Walker's chart. It was just sitting there on the counter. She says she thought it was hers, so now she thinks she's pregnant.
I am so sorry about that. It has been just crazy here today. Please, go out to the waiting room before she leaves and explain to Ms. Smith that it's Ms. Walker the one that's pregnant.
Okay, I will. She's out there getting on her coat now.
What are you two talking about? Can you believe that Ms. Walker is pregnant? I thought she was way too old. I was just talking to my other patient about it. They're neighbors, you know, and she is so excited.
It is wonderful, isn't it? I'm really pleased for her.
Sorry to interrupt you three, but I just got a text from Dr. Hubert. He is off today, but he wants us to call in his patient, Mr. Schroeder, to discuss his STD diagnosis.
Schroeder? I hate that guy. I'll see him to give him that news. I never knew anyone that deserves it more.
Doctor, you're so bad. See that woman in that corner in the waiting room? She may be interested in that diagnosis, if you know what I mean.
Well, if that's the case, we have the obligation to let her know. Now, put her in exam room 2 and I'll have a chat with her.
Miss, can you follow me, please? Dr. Snell has some very disturbing news for you.
Wait, she's not even a patient here. She was just waiting for her husband. You people are going to drive me to drink.
Good morning, Morgan Center for Fertility. How can I help you?
I'm sorry, who did you say you were? I can't imagine how that could have happened. Can you give me your number again?
Well, I'm so sorry. Can you please destroy that document and assure me you will not share that information?
What do you mean, no?
Sir?
Sir? I think we may have a problem. I may have accidentally sent Mr. Schroeder's test results to his employer's fax number rather than the insurance company. What do I do now?
Don't sweat it. They would probably have found out anyway, but we need to be more careful. If the insurance company didn't get the fax, then we would not get paid.
Okay, I put that lady in exam room 2. Who wants to talk to her?
Me!
You two fight it out, and I'm going to call my husband and tell him how I sent Mr. Schroeder's information to the wrong place. He'll get a kick out of that.
I can't imagine you have time. Have you seen the waiting room? It's so crowded. I snapped a picture for Instagram. No one would believe me otherwise.
Oh, could you send me a copy of that picture?
Me too.
Okay, well, that certainly gives us a lot to work with. Where would you like to even begin here?
I don't know. I think it's pretty obvious that this organization has some pretty significant issues with HIPAA compliance, wouldn't you say?
A few, you know, just one or two.
And I think it's important that we point out that those staff members probably should go through some heavy retraining and perhaps some initial training in HIPAA. Maybe they don't know anything about it at all. You know, the HIPAA regulation, it actually, HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996. And in it included a number of provisions to assure the privacy of patient information. It's been updated many times over the last 20 years. And the basic premise is that patient health information has to be protected from disclosure, that only individuals with a valid need to see that information should have access to it. Compliance starts with knowledge of the law and training of your staff. I mean, I think that's the only way that we can fix this type of a problem. And training should include both an explanation of what is protected and then some specific training on how it is implemented in each of the practice settings. In our case, in an ambulatory surgery center, how do we implement it in ambulatory surgery practices? For example, an ASC is going to want to discuss how patients are treated upon registration, how we treat their operative records, who can have access to those records both on the day of surgery and after the medical record has been filed, how you release that information to outside individuals if it's necessary, et cetera. Ongoing annual training is really critical. We just can't assume, Judy, that people will come into our organization with full knowledge of HIPAA. Maybe we hired from outside of the healthcare field. Maybe they, you know, received inappropriate training before, or maybe the practice in their particular setting is very different than the practice in here. Not that HIPAA or patient health information is different, but knowledge of the different ways in which we can accidentally disclose information might be very different. So ongoing training is really important, not just the first time. And in addition to training, employees really need to know that there are going to be consequences of their actions up to and including termination.
See, the point you're making is clear, except if you listen to our scenario again, none of these people were malicious or wanted to do anything. These seem like very happy people. They were very pleased for the woman that had finally become pregnant. They were just a little too happy, I think, and wanted to spread the joy.
Except for the doctor, I think, indeed, there was no maliciousness there, and that's a very good point. I'll give the story. I mean, we use as an example in our training a nurse who goes to church and lifts up one of the patients that she saw during her job for joys and concerns because, you know, she wanted them, you know, wanted, you know, prayers to be said for them. And of course, that was not appropriate because the only way that she had learned of this patient's involvement or problem was through her job.
But talk about an example of the best of intentions just can still get you into trouble, you know.
Absolutely. So, now, the other issue I think right now is advances in computer technology. A lot of changes have occurred since the 90s when this law came out, and certainly accidental disclosure or disclosure through our computer systems is even more of a problem today, certainly, than it was back then. And one of the things that we really are required to do is annual risk assessments, both for regular HIPAA as well as for the security measures. So at the ASCA 2018 winter seminars, I did have an opportunity to talk to my dear friend Christina Benton, who spoke at a session entitled Common HIPAA Misconceptions Dispelled. And this spoke to the issue of risk assessments. And I had an opportunity actually to speak to her after the presentation. Let's hear what she had to say. I'm here at ASCA 2018 Winter Seminars in Las Vegas, and I have with me Christina Benton, one of the speakers of the conference and one of the nation's leading ASC coding and business experts. Welcome, Christina.
Well, hello, John. It's nice to see you again.
Great to be back here. You know, you just finished a great session entitled Common Misconceptions About HIPAA. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your presentation and what you wanted the attendees to take away from this session?
Sure. We're having a lot of questions and a lot of issues coming up these days regarding risk assessments or the lack thereof. And it's surprising to see how many facilities and providers truly are not performing their due diligence and performing risk assessments annually. So what we've tried to convey to the audience is that risk assessments are not only an option, but a requirement for HIPAA to be able to be in compliance with their privacy and security rules. And it's also important that we don't do, from a risk assessment aspect, that you not only just perform the assessment, which can take hours of man work and legwork, but to also execute any policies and procedures that are implemented. I think one of the big issues we see is that the facility tends to do an overall, okay, we're good mentality when they're not even involving their IT people to verify the risk that might be the weakest link within their facilities.
Thank you very much, Christina, for joining me, and we'll see you later.
Thank you, John.
Well, wow, that was really informative. It was great of her to share that knowledge with us. But you talked about a lot of things. So what do you want our listeners to really come away with from this?
Absolutely. So I think, obviously, risk assessments are something that we need to be doing, including reviewing your computer system vulnerabilities. And based upon those risk assessments and your own observations, regularly review and update your HIPAA policies, retrain your staff annually, and observe their interactions with patients and make changes as necessary to improve the privacy practices.
That's perfect. Okay. Well, that's a lot to take in. So we're going to take a little break now. And when we come back, we're going to do my favorite part of the podcast, which is our listener questions. So stay tuned. Okay, so we have now reached one of my favorite parts of the podcast, and that is where we read one of the questions sent in by our listeners. So I'm going to read this from one of our listeners in New York, and it reads, I work in a center in New York City, and after a patient is transferred to the hospital, we can never get a copy of the hospital discharge summary from the hospital. They claim to us that this is a HIPAA violation. Is this true, and is there any way I can get around that? Well, John, is that true?
Well, unfortunately, this is very common, and we've been dealing with this with all of our New York City clients for quite some time. Under the HIPAA regulations, as we all know, information that is shared for treatment, payment, or operations, better known as TPO, is allowed without getting specific consent from the patient. This is one of those scenarios where, as part of the treatment of the patient, we're following up with the hospital afterwards to see how the patient recovered after the transfer to the hospital. So the hospital should be willing to give us that information, knowing that we were the transferring facility without any additional approvals from the patient. However, it's almost a lost battle. We've been trying this for a couple of years, and my personal recommendation in this scenario is that that you have your consent changed so that it specifically states in the consent if the patient is transferred to the hospital that they automatically give approval to release that the hospital's discharge summary to the ambulatory surgery center.
Okay, that's a good answer. So if you're one of our listeners in New York City or anywhere for that matter, and you found that you've come across this where an admitting hospital just is unwilling or unable to share that with you, it's a good idea to change your consent form so that right from the get-go, you know, in the unseen event that you are transferred to a acute care facility, you consent to have those records shared with us.
I agree with you. I think that it's probably good advice, not only for the facilities in New York City, but anywhere else, just on the off chance. It's very important as part of your quality improvement program that you receive that discharge summary so that you can close the loop on the incident with the transfer to the patient. And the best way to do that, of course, is to get a copy of the discharge summary.
Great. Thank you so much for that answer. And again, please send your questions into us. We want to hear what you want to learn about and how we can help you. So please keep those questions coming in. And that's all we have for this week. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you enjoyed all of it. Our skit and our backup of that and our guest speaker today and everything. We hope that you enjoyed being here, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers. and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring with the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.